I trust myself with taking risks because I've built that trust with myself over time. And I think a lot of people can get caught up in that. They can put so much value on one thing and forget that despite the outcome of that thing, like this is a really small piece of your life. And I think a lot of people think like you have to do this for 15 years before you can get to the thing that you actually want to do, or like the thing that this is going to lead you to.
Right.
When in fact, I'm already in that space.
Yep.
Thematically, I think my purpose in life is to create more empathy in the world. I think in general, everyone's life is a derivative of the people around them. I feel like I'm at the bottom of a mountain looking up at the like that vantage point that I want to get to. But I've like always been walking around the base of the mountain looking for the trail, and now I found the trail. And I'm like, oh, okay, I can see it. I just have to start walking up it.
Think about the last hour-long conversation that you had. Now multiply that by 10,000. That is today's guest's mission. Rob Lawless is on a quest to meet with 10,000 people, one-on-one for 1 hour each. But this wasn't always Rob's day job. He started his early career as a consultant at Deloitte and working in sales at a startup. But he craved more, and that's when he decided to start this project. Not because he wanted anything out of it, but purely because he loved connecting with people. And even though he didn't know where it was going to lead him, Rob has connected with about 5,000 people now. And in today's episode, Rob shares some of the key lessons he's learned along his incredible journey thus far. Like how you can turn a side project into sustainable income. Why he believes empathy is the key to building better relationships, and how we can all connect on a more intentional and deep level. So without further ado, my name is Dan Russo, and this is Grow, the podcast where each week we bring on entrepreneurs, creators, and other inspiring guests to help you grow into the best version of yourself. What's going on, man? How are you tonight?
Doing well, Dan. Good to talk to you again. Always a pleasure. I appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you coming on, man. I am so excited for this conversation for a multitude of different reasons. But I always start here with my guests, and I'm going to give you the same question that I give every other guest in the beginning of the conversation, because I think it's pivotal. I think it's, you know, for everything that you're going to say hereafter, which is, who is Rob Lawless? What was the kind of environment that you were created in when you were a kid?
I am, well, first things that come to mind, I'm the youngest of three in my family. So I am a little brother and a son, and I'm from the suburbs of Philadelphia originally, which is where I'm calling in from tonight. So grew up here in a loving family. I still have both my parents. They're still together. They recently celebrated 44 years. So
that's incredible.
Awesome family dynamic. Yeah, very lucky. And went to Catholic school from like kindergarten all the way up until senior year of high school, or like graduated Catholic high school, and was really involved. Like I've always, which is a theme, like I've always been a people person in grade school. So like K through eight in that time, I did soccer. I played basketball. I ran track and field. It's in like the speech club. And then in high school, I played soccer again all 4 years. I played golf for 2 years. I was in student council. I did a community service club, National Honor Society. I was the president my senior year. And I also worked part-time in high school. So I started working when I was 14 years old as a cashier at Chick-fil-A. And then after 2 summers of doing that, I did like secretary work for a local financial advisor. It's just like a small 10-person company. And then I went to Penn State, studied finance there, also very involved in clubs and activities, like joined a fraternity, was part of the Penn State Dance Marathon. It's a fundraiser for the fight against pediatric cancer. I did Habitat for Humanity. What else? I was a tour guide for prospective students, and I was part of our homecoming efforts. So always like super involved in surrounding myself with people. And then I graduated 2013, jumped into consulting for Deloitte, did that for 1 year and 3 months. Shifted to a tech startup to do sales for them. That company had like $24 million in funding at the time, and I moved into Philly for that job. And when I was there, I had always had this interest in entrepreneurship, and I decided to tap into it at that point. And in November 2015, I started Rob's 10K Friends, which, as you know, is my mission to spend 1 hour one-on-one with 10,000 different people. I met the first person November of 2015, took it full-time 8 months later because the company I worked for was bought out. And the rest is history, and we'll go from there, because I know I just gave you a lot of information, but yeah, that's kind of who I was up to this point.
Absolutely. No, look, I'm excited to dig into a lot of what you just said there. And the first thing that comes to mind is kind of your family dynamic. Talk to me, being the youngest. I'm the oldest, so I don't know what it's like to be anything else than that. Talk to me, being the youngest. How did that help shape your personality and just like who you are? Do you think it had an impact, or, you know, what aspect of your family life do you think had an impact in terms of, you know, help crafting, you know, some of your personality and kind of who you are today?
Oh yeah, I think it had a huge impact on who I was. I think just being the youngest in general is like it's a good thing. Have you seen Squid Game, the series?
I haven't. I've heard from many people that I should really dig into it, but my girlfriend likes to joke that I'm like really behind on like big pop culture events. She hasn't watched it either. but I know what it is, and I'm up to date on at least that. But
there's a scene in it where they're like, they have to cross basically glass panes.
Ooh.
And I won't give away the information, but when you see that scene, think back to this conversation, and there's like an order, and the first person is basically like being the oldest child, and the last is like the youngest. And the moral of the story is, when you're the youngest child, you get to see, like, I have my older brother who's 2 years older than me and a sister who's 6 years older, and I've gotten to see the moves that they've made with their lives.
Yeah.
And I get to evaluate with that information, whereas like my sister, when she was looking at colleges, she really had to make the first choice and like go out into the deep end. For me, I saw my sister go to Penn State. I saw my brother go there. So I kind of knew what I was getting myself into.
Yep.
And the same thing for what I studied. I mean, my sister studied marketing. My brother studied finance. And I saw kind of the difference in like starting salaries for both of those and kind of the lifestyles that they were living. And I chose to go the finance route because I got to see what they both looked like.
Absolutely.
So that was a big piece. And then I think being the youngest in general, like, I'm much more mellow now than I was when I was a kid. But as a kid, I was always pining for attention because you like want people to pay attention to you. You know, yep. You want to be able to hang out with your older siblings, friends, and be the cool kid. So there was a bit of that in my personality. And I think that probably tied into me being such a people person.
Yeah.
So those things had a huge impact on who I am today and still do. I mean, my sister has a 16-month-old and another baby due in February, and like, I plan to be a father someday. So getting to see what it's like to have a child before I have to do that on my own, like, I'm constantly learning from them.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's incredible. I wonder if my brother and sister are watching me as closely as you watch yours. If so,
I'm sure they are.
They definitely shouldn't do some of the things that I have done.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. And I think that my older siblings look to me as well at times. And I'm sure you do with your younger siblings. And yeah, I think there's definitely that like respect and appreciation.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point that you just made, that, you know, as much as you looked up to them, I'm sure they look back to you, right? I mean, I look to my brother and sister all the time because they're just both, you know, as they've grown up, they've just developed into such, you know, introspective, just like great human beings, right? It's kind of weird because there's 8 and 9 years between each of us. So they're 8 and 9 years younger than I am, and they're only a year apart. And you know, they're finally kind of like adults-ish now. One's a senior in high school, the other is a freshman in college. And it's really been interesting to kind of watch them just take their, you know, kind of first mini steps into adulthood. So it's just been an incredible, you know, experience to see that as their older sibling. And certainly hope I'm setting a good example. But at the same time, you know, it's cool to experiment with my own life, you know, kind of getting thrown into that deep end, like you said, being that first person across the glass pane. I can't wait to watch that scene now. That's an incredible takeaway to have there. And it's it sounds like they were pretty instrumental in your growth as well, being able to not only look up to them and kind of, you know, perhaps, you know, make decisions based on what their experiences were, but also perhaps, you know, to look at them and say, you know what, I don't want to do what either of them did and make my own path. It sounds like there was a little bit in that there as well, in terms of, you know, your project with Rob's 10K Friends and becoming an entrepreneur, etc. So, you know, that's an awesome quality that you had there as well.
Yeah. And I guess in a sense, this is my diving into the deep end.
Yeah.
This is my trying, because neither of them are entrepreneurial. So, and neither are my parents. So for my whole family, I'm the first one kind of experiencing this life and like this idea of creating your own path, which is fun and challenging and everything in between.
How did you, coming from a family that is not entrepreneurial, like you said, how did you come to the decision that you wanted to do that? Because it's pretty scary to either leave or get let go from a job and just not search for another one, or search for another one and then eventually decide that you want to take something full time that has no guaranteed paycheck, no guaranteed success, etc. And I know in our last conversation, you and I talked a little bit about some of the risks that you took. What was it about you that you said, I'm going to just, you know, I'm going to take the plunge? Was it, you know, did you jump off a cliff without a parachute, or did you have, you know, a little bit more of a, you know, kind of strategic, practical approach to the decision?
I feel like everything is a calculated risk. Like the project still, it's like a rolling calculated risk, if you will. And like now, for example, I started speaking over this summer, and I found that I'm able to make money that way and good money. And now to me, that's like, okay, I can continue going forward with this path because I have found a way to get income. And like, if one company is going to pay me to speak, that means there's others that are out there. And even if I don't have those gigs set up right now, it's really just on me to go out and find them and like put myself in the position to succeed.
Absolutely.
So it's like a rolling calculated risk. And I think I trust myself with taking risks because I've built that trust with myself over time.
Right.
And I'll take you back to high school. So my senior year of high school, I was president of the National Honor Society. I was president of the Community Service Corps. I was playing soccer. I was working part-time at that financial firm and also was doing class. So I took 3 classes at my high school, and then I took 2 classes per semester at Villanova University. So like a program that you could take college courses.
Yep.
And I was just in with the students, like as if I were a regular college student. Yeah. They didn't know the difference. So I had always done well in school, like studying kind of came easy to me.
Yep.
I always was really good with my memory and stuff. And my second microeconomics exam at Villanova, they're like, read the textbook. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. And big surprise, I failed the exam. I got like a 60 or something on the second exam, which for me was kind of jarring because in high school, that never happened to me. I was always able to just get away with studying the night before.
Yep.
And yeah, it's a gift and very lucky to be that way.
Right.
But then I was very proud of my good grades too. So it put me in this position where I really needed to nail the final.
Yep.
And like I went to the professor and I got help studying and stuff. And it also made me realize how to be a good college student.
Yep.
But anyways, I felt so much pressure on my life in that time because I just felt so overwhelmed by this exam. And I can distinctly remember sitting at my dinner table at my parents and having like the holiday Christmas on in the background, or the holiday music in the background, and just head in the book like all day. Like come home from school,
yeah,
studying all day until the night, all day, like trying to figure out this microeconomic stuff.
Yep.
And 2 things happened. 1, I actually did well on the final exam, so I got that trust that like if I put in the work, I could succeed. And the other thing that happened was I decided like, hey, as long as this exam doesn't kill me, I can still be a success, whether I do well on it or not. Like this exam is not the determinant of my success as a person. And I think a lot of people can get caught up in that. They can put so much value on one thing and forget that despite the outcome of that thing, like this is a really small piece of your life. So I developed that kind of understanding. And then when I went to Penn State, I did really well in school as well. And I trusted myself to study and do the work. And I split that with going out with friends and partying and stuff. But on exams, when I didn't know the right answer, like I would know which ones I had right and which ones I had wrong.
Yeah.
And if I knew that one was wrong or that I didn't know the answer to it, sometimes I'd have an inkling towards an answer and I'd be like, well, subconsciously, it must be this one because there must be something in my mind that studied and was like, choose C. So I do it, and a lot of times I would get it right, and I kind of learned to trust my gut and, like, yeah, train that intuition.
Absolutely.
And also, like, I was going to the gym 3 days a week, and I think I got disciplined in, like, if I say I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to do it. So that's a very long way of saying, like, when I decided to do this project to meet 10,000 people, in the beginning, a lot of people look at you like, no, you're not. Like, you say you're going to do it, but you're
right.
And for me, I had to be like, okay, well, I'm just going to do it, and then when I do, then you can look at it and be like, oh, you did. So I just trusted myself to stick to the goal. And then when I took it full time, I trusted myself to pay attention to the small types of validation, whether it was, yep, someone reaching out to meet or a press piece on the project or someone willing to do a partnership with me. I've had those things sprinkled throughout. And that to me was like that rolling calculated risk that I talk about. Like if none of those things happened, I probably would have had to reevaluate the path that I was on.
Absolutely.
But they were happening here and there, and that allowed me to continue like taking what seems like a huge risk and kind of breaking it down on a more daily or weekly basis, if that makes sense.
I love that. I love how you took a what would seemingly be a huge mission, because it is a big mission, right? You are 5 years plus into this, right? 6 years, right? You said you did 2015?
Yeah, November 11th of 2015. So I just celebrated 6 years. Yeah, thank you.
But I mean, you're 6 years into this and you're at just under 5,000, I believe, people that you've spoken to for an hour.
Yeah, the most recent person I met was actually 4,700.
4,700. So you're at 4,700 people. So you're just about, let's just call it halfway there, right? You're just under halfway there. So you probably will have another at least, you know, maybe 4 to 6 years of this, right? Depending upon, you know, if you increase pace, you know, et cetera, right? That's almost a decade of your life. I don't know anybody that personally that is committed to a decade long goal, right? I mean, I know athletes do it, I know, et cetera, but I mean, to be able to do that, did you know that that's what you were signing up for when you started it? And I think your ability to break down those goal, that large goal, right? A decade or more, into those smaller goals is probably, no, definitely a huge part of your success, because we need those small wins or those small benchmarks. We need to be able to give ourselves those milestones in the near term, I believe, in order to create sustainable growth. So when you started this, did you have any idea that that's how long it was going to take?
Absolutely not. No, I way, way underestimated it, because I thought when I first thought of the idea, I thought I was going to meet people for 10 minutes at a time.
Okay.
And I just thought like the concept of it was cool to meet 10,000 people and
right,
introduce myself to 10,000 people. And I still have the iPhone notes from January of 2014. And I had the calculations written out. And like in my mind, I just thought, okay, we'll take an 8-hour workday, subtract an hour for lunch. So you have 7 hours.
Yep.
Divide that by 10. It was like 40 people a day and 200 people a week. And I was like, yeah, no problem. It's going to be so easy. And then, yeah, there's just, it's funny. And I think it's a good lesson of like, when you're thinking about your ideas, if you do all of the thinking you can about that idea, you've probably thought about 10% of what you need to know. Like you just don't know what you don't know.
Yep.
And you can't figure that rest of that out until you go down the path. But yeah. And then when I switched it to an hour, because I in my tech sales, I was doing 30-minute phone calls, and that was short enough that it still felt surface level. So I was like, I'm going to double that. I'm going to have time to run out of topics to talk about with people. And at that time, like if you look back at my initial emails to people, I say I'm going to do this in aggressively about 4 years. And I think still I was kind of in that mindset of like, if you take a 7-hour workday, like, yep, 7 people a day, when in reality, the most I've ever done consistently is like 5 people a day, which is right after I took it full time. And that's a lot. Like,
yeah,
with each person I meet for an hour, there's about an hour of associated like messaging, setting up times to meet,
yep,
writing of their post. So for your audience, like I have an Instagram account, Rob's Take 10K Friends, and I take a picture with everyone and I write about their life afterwards. So that whole post and all that is like an additional hour. So like five, right, turns into 10.
And you put a lot of time and energy into those, that writing and the post itself, and obviously the conversation too, but you put a lot of time and energy into that writing. I know, because you've very kindly featured me, you know, as guest 4,000 and something. I don't remember the exact number. And I don't expect you to either with all the conversation.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I know because I read it and I was like, oh my God, like, you know, the fact that you like probably had to rewatch some things, or maybe you did it from memory, I don't know. But you wrote that out, and I was like, you really cared, you know, and to do that with each conversation 10,000 times over, or 4,700 times over thus far, is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and I used to do everything from memory. Now with so I used to meet everyone in person, and all that was from memory. And if I do meet someone in person still, it's still from memory.
Yeah.
But when I shifted to Zoom with the pandemic, it took me a bit, but then I got comfortable enough to ask people, like, hey, do you mind if I record this?
Yeah.
And then I would just grab a clip. So I have, like, the assistance of the Zoom recordings now. Sometimes I prefer just doing it from memory because it's much faster for me.
Like, yeah.
I'll write the story as I'm talking to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then Zoom is, like, it's almost like riding with the training wheels on a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I still care very much about people's stories, and I care about, like, some of the highest compliments that I've received are from people being like, I came into this thinking that, you know, you've met 4,700 people and like you weren't going to be that interested in me, or like I was just another person to you. But they're like, I really felt like you listened and cared and were attentive to my story, which I am, because I'm genuinely interested in it. But yeah, I care about writing people's stories, and so that takes time. And so going back to the original question, now I think it's going to be like 10 more years before I'm done. And yeah, it's been 4,700 people in just over 6 years. I say 10 more because now, like, I have this speaking side to the project as well. So that means I have to fly out to places to speak, and I have to work on contracts, and I have to prospect. And all of that is a necessary piece of the puzzle, because that's how I'm going to have the income to complete the project.
Yep.
But it pulls away from the pace at which I'm moving. But
absolutely,
in the grand scheme of things, it's all cool. Like, when you were talking about that, I was thinking, the idea of committing to something for 15 years, it sounds really daunting, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think a lot of people think, like, you have to do this for 15 years before you can get to the thing that you actually want to do, or like the thing that this is going to lead you to.
Right, right.
When in fact, I'm already in that space. Yep. Like, I've gotten to the place that I want to be. So it could take 20 years and I'd be having fun with it.
100%. Talk to me. That's such an interesting point that you made right there, right? It's the classic debate of, you know, chasing after happiness, right, at a destination. And then most people, when they actually get to that destination or achieve that goal that they think they need in order to be happy, they actually realize that they're only happy for like a day, and that goal is actually giving them fleeting happiness. And then they adjust very quickly. I think it's called hedonic adaptation. And as humans, we just like adapt very quickly to any sort of new circumstance that we get, right? So if I get a new Mercedes today, I don't have one now. but if I got a new Mercedes, I would like, it would be the new toy for like a week. And then I'd very quickly adapt back down to it. And I'd be looking at the next rung on the ladder, right? So talk to me a little bit about, you know, how have you, did you, when you started this, did you figure that you were going to need to get to 10,000 people in order to like be happy? Or did you figure out that the pursuit of the 10K was actually really where the happiness was?
I think it was probably like a hybrid of both. I don't think I appreciated the pursuit as much as I do now, like when I first started.
Yeah.
And I probably thought that it was like a key to escape the corporate world. I thought it was an interesting concept that I would enjoy working on, but I think I still had some like destination mindset going on at that point, because I thought like I would be able to do this cool project. It'd be a great concept. It'd be both impactful for me and the people around me. And then I could do whatever after that. And then of course, like when it's not taking 4 years, and you're like, oh, this is going to take much longer than I thought. And
right.
Like, oh, it's going to take me much longer to even get to a point of stability to do this. That, like, it's impossible to continue if you're not passionate about it, if you're not falling in love with that process.
Yep.
And I just fell in love with the process along the way. And now it is both personally fulfilling for me, and I think a lot more like, what is the impact beyond me just meeting people?
Right.
I think about that a lot more, like, yeah, it's great and it's cool for people to see me meeting people and having this fun experience. But but what does it mean for them? And what does it mean for like people down the road? And I think that's kind of where the speaking comes in and future plans of being a professor at a university. And thematically, I think my purpose in life is to create more empathy in the world. Mm. So I see myself as being a positive example for that right now. But I'm becoming more passionate about expanding that beyond just like Rob sits down with someone. And I think it's going to spill into a classroom at some point.
That's incredible. So first of all, the fact that you have that mission figured out, you answered my next question, which was what excites you about this project? What's the reason? What's the purpose behind it? You already answered that. And you said that it's to bring more empathy into the world. And you're doing that, I think, between these conversations. But talk to me a little bit more about those future plans. Like, how do you want to parlay, Rob's 10K Friends, the project, and perhaps also some of the speaking that you're doing? And we'll get into both of those in a minute. But how do you want to parlay those things into the classroom? And are there other plans to kind of expand that sphere of influence as well?
The way that I think about it right now, and this kind of goes back to that same thing of like thinking of everything, but that only being 10% of the actual thing. Like, my plan right now is to establish myself as a speaker and continue to speak until the end of time, both as a way to support myself and as a way of making a positive impact.
Awesome.
And then once I'm finished the project, I think it'd be cool to be a professor at a university and have a class where students pair off one-on-one and learn from each other's backgrounds rather than a textbook or a PowerPoint slide.
I love that.
Because, yeah, there's just so much exchange of value person to person. And on top of that, you are getting much better at sharing your own story and becoming an active listener.
Yeah.
And I think both of those skills are not really that taught in college. And they are super valuable when you get to the work world. And I think to have the ability to create, like, I don't know how many classes in a semester, like 30 new connections your very first semester in school, and then foster them over the next 4 years, I just see a lot of long-term value to that, because I think back to how close I still am with my college friends.
Right.
And if people didn't make good friends in college, like, maybe they didn't have that space to create those relationships.
Yeah.
So I see myself proving at one university that that's valuable, and then another university being like, hey, we should start doing this too. And then I can teach someone else to teach it there. And my hope is that eventually there's this, as kids go into college or even if it's at a high school level, they're like passing through this wave of perspective of connecting with their classmates. Because even in high school, I went to Catholic school and they had a retreat called Kairos, which was like this religious, I think it was a three or four day retreat that was very impactful. And like, you learned a ton about your classmates and you did it going into senior year. And I was like, what the heck? I walked the halls with these kids for 3 years and knew none of what they were going, like what was going on in their households or the baggage that they were carrying with them. And if you knew that, you'd be more careful or more delicate with how you treat people.
Yep.
And yeah, I just think like if you can create a layer of that for society to move through, then that creates a lot more empathy for the world.
It seems like you are trying to create better conversations, better dialogue, more transparency through conversation and the exchanging of past experiences, current experiences, ideas, etc. And then through that more open, tolerant communication, you're trying to instill more empathy through those connections. Is that a good summary of that? I mean, you summarized it perfectly, but like, I'm trying to regurgitate it to you just so that I understand it, because I think it's a huge mission. I think it's incredible.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think just non-agenda driven communication.
Yeah.
To just realize the true value. And you talked about like what excites me about the project or about my meetings.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's something that excites me long term. But on a more daily basis, it's like the thing that excites me is I don't know what this person's backstory is or what I'm going to learn from it.
Yeah.
Or what I'll take away from that time together or when I'll see that person again. So I think you're a really good example of like, we come into this conversation as like, hey, what's up, man? It's good to see you. How have things been? Instead of like, hey, it's nice to meet you, my name is Rob, like we've already done that because we have established this foundation. And so now we have this familiarity, which is cool that we have seen each other now with like that sense of familiarity. But beyond that, you told me about the book Show Your Work by Austin Kleon. I afterwards went out, got that book from the library, and I read it. So you impacted the way that I spent my time. Like, however long it took me to read that book was a direct result of the time I spent with you. So that excites me too, because it's like, you don't, I think in general, everyone's life is a derivative of the people around them.
Yep.
I'm just more conscious and self-aware of it because I spend so much time with people, so I can see how they impact my time. But I think it's the same for everyone else, but they're probably just like so like wrapped up with work and stuff that they don't think about like, actually, the reason I listen to this artist is because that person told me about it. Or the reason I'm watching this Netflix show is because this person told me about it.
Absolutely. That's a really interesting theory and a great observation, too, because it sounds like almost like, you know, the way that we think, right, or the things that we do can almost be traced back to some source, right? Whether it was an article or a TV show or another person in a conversation that we had, right? It can likely be traced back to a person because, I mean, people are, even if it's a TV show or an article, somebody is behind that creating it, right? So that's really interesting. And in that way, you know, you're an influencer, whether you're just having a one-on-one conversation like we are, or whether you're someone that's paying attention to your Instagram page and listening to the conversations that you're having. So that's really interesting way to think about it is that, you know, almost everything that we do can almost be traced back to a conversation or a person.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. All of our thoughts and ideas and everything, which is cool.
It's incredibly cool. It's a really great observation. Something that not a lot of people think about, I'm sure. I'm just thinking about this like this massive web of just like who's influenced me now.
Yeah, you have like a little journal exercise.
What is the biggest thing, not the biggest thing that you've learned, what's the most interesting or surprising thing that you've learned about human connection through this project?
That's a good question. I think I guess I'm surprised by the willingness of people to just pass me along. I don't know if I expected that to happen or not in the beginning, but
yeah,
a lot of the people that I've met are because people say you should talk to this person or you should talk to that person. And now I'm fortunate to have like a queue of people who've reached out to me. So
yeah.
I don't necessarily need it at this point, but sometimes like I had a friend from Penn State recently. I think it was because I posted that I made a LinkedIn post about my 6-year anniversary and some things I learned, and she commented and she was like, you should talk to this person from UT Austin because she works there.
Yeah.
And this dude, like, he's a space environmentalist. So he used to be in charge of like navigating like the vehicles that would take the instruments of Mars to Mars or whatever. I don't know. And now he's like on this mission to basically, he's like 96% of the stuff that we track on orbit in space is junk. And it's basically like what we did to the ocean with microplastics and what we're doing to like the atmosphere. And he's like, it's happening in space too. And his goal or his desire is to taper that. He's like, scientists have come up with ways to flatten that curve.
Yeah.
And we just need to get enough people passionate about it that it's kind of like global warming. Like you need to get enough people passionate talking about it to really get like the bigger corporations or the governments to stop it.
Right.
So yeah, she was just like, talk to this dude. And I talked to him in a really amazing conversation, but I've had other people be like, talk to this person or talk to this person. And then that leads to really great press opportunities or really interesting stories or just fun experiences. And yeah, I guess I don't know if I anticipated how willing people were to help. And I think it's the alchemist is like the world steps aside for the man or the woman who knows where they're going. It's something along those lines. And I've seen that to be pretty true, which is cool.
The world steps aside. Say that again, the world steps aside.
It's the world steps aside for the person who knows where they're going. Or it's like when you do something, the universe will conspire to help you achieve it. Or like when you do something with all your heart. So there's, anyone's listening to this or if you want to look it up afterwards, there's a much better, cleaner version of that quote out there somewhere. But you get the idea.
But you know what? We're going to put Rob Lawless's paraphrase stamp on that quote right here on the Grow Podcast. You can only get that one here.
Yeah, that's the unique one.
I love that. Through this conversation, there's something that's become innately clear to me, is that you have this innate sense of curiosity. Where do you think that comes from?
I have no idea. I think it was just natural. Like I have a 16-month-old nephew right now, and he's super, super curious, and he reminds me a lot of myself. And it's a good thing and a bad thing, right? Like, it can get you in trouble. And he's, like, opening every drawer and pulling every pot and pan out. And it can be frustrating, but it's also, like, you want to foster that. And for me, when I was in preschool, I was like, I noticed that like a bear, like plastic bear, made a mark on the wall. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, what happens if I continue to rub it on the wall? Oh, it makes other marks. And then before you know it, my parents are paying for a new wall for the preschool. And yeah, I think the curiosity has always been a part of my life. And I can't think back to like a way of me developing it. I think that's just a natural characteristic of mine. Yeah. But it's something that I've chosen to foster rather than dim. And I think mm-hmm. that's been important. And I think for me, a big motivation behind this project is like, it makes me feel like a kid. It makes me feel like I'm on an adventure, like I'm in The Hobbit or something like that. And that's what I want my life to be like. I want it to be like this grand journey, as opposed to I go to the office and I sit in my cubicle for 40 years. Not to say there's anything wrong with that. It's like,
yeah,
that is the exact right risk profile for some people, and that makes them happy. But for me, it wasn't adventurous enough for me, and I had to take advantage of that. And yeah, the project became my solution to that issue.
I think that's an incredible piece of advice that you just said there. Curiosity is an innate, you know, sort of talent characteristic that you have, and you've chosen to foster it rather than dim it. I think that is probably some of the best advice that you could give anyone who is wondering if they should take charge of a talent that they have, whether it comes naturally to them or they've worked at it, right? You know, and if they enjoy it, they should probably lean into that more. And I think that that's something that I didn't do earlier in my career. You know, I thought that I kind of had to be in this box of, I was a journalism major in college, and I had all this skill set, you know, around writing and around, you know, kind of video content creation and graphic design. And I loved doing that for a time. And I think it was sort of my unfair advantage to get me into positions and rooms in my career and in my life that I wouldn't have necessarily otherwise gotten into. But I came to a point after a few years of doing it that I was like, you know, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. It doesn't really light me on fire, the content creation aspect. Creating does, but sitting there editing, you know, a video or writing a blog, etc., it just, you know, it didn't set me on fire anymore. I don't know if it ever did, truthfully speaking. And that's when I decided that I really wanted to make a strategic pivot to, in my career, focus more on business development and building relationships. And I've been fortunate enough to, in my last position, have the opportunity to do that. And as I continue to look for a job right now, I'm hoping that in my next position, I'll also be fortunate enough to do that as well. And I'm confident that I will be. But it's really interesting because I've always had this innate, just, I don't want to say charisma, but this desire to just interact with people. I love, like you, I think I have a curiosity about people, about the world, about myself. And I think that I'm really starting to lean into that more in the last couple of years, and more as I continue to grow on my own personal journey. So I relate to that a lot, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's in all of our past, like it's a hard thing to do sometimes, to think about like, let me consciously foster this thing right in my life or not. And like, you get overwhelmed. And I'm sure when I was at Deloitte, like I felt that pressure of not really feeling like I was on the right path.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I guess, honestly, like I took the leap early enough.
Yeah.
Like taking the leap at 24 was probably instrumental in, so I started it when I was 24.
Yep.
I took it full time when I was 25.
Yep.
And like, if I was married with a wife and kids right now, there's no way that I could like build on the lowest level for 6 years.
Yeah.
And then just start to get to the point where I'm still not even at a point where I'm like making a true living off of it, but I'm very much working towards that now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, the timing was huge. And not to say that people can't take risks later in life. It looks differently, but for me, it was really helpful.
Absolutely. No, I mean, look, I think that depending on the project size and depending upon what the project is, right, generally speaking, it does help to start younger in certain situations, right? And that's why I kind of lit a fire under my ass this year, because I realized that the older that I get, the more serious things get. And if I want to, you know, start this podcast, if I want to, you know, sort of, you know, dip my toe in it, now is the time, because I'm not getting any younger. And also because, you know, the earlier that I get started, the more likely that I'll be able to learn from my mistakes and grow along that journey. I want to get into a little bit of the practicality of the 6 years that you've been doing this. So, you know, you start it in 2015, you take the leap when you're 24 to take it full time. Talk to me, you know, if somebody is, you know, thinking about starting a project like this, right? What are some of the practical things that they should be thinking about? Because you seem like you did this very practically to, you know, you didn't have no money in your bank account and no safety net to, to catch you, right? It seems like you were very practical in terms of, making a, not necessarily a leap, but a sort of, toe dipped into the deep end and then continuing to kind of progressively go into the pool, if you will. That's probably a bad analogy, but I hope you get the gist of it. So talk to me a little bit about how, what were some of the practical things that you were thinking about, both when you made the decision to take that leap and leave corporate America, but at the same time, the practical steps that you thought about, what were some of those smaller milestones, the goalposts that you reached that you said, I'm going to keep going here?
I think, I think that the key is like taking inventory of your resources. Like, I think about that more and more. If you want to bake a cake, for example,
right,
you need eggs and flour and sugar and whatever goes into a cake. I don't know what else goes into a cake, but icing. Like, if all you have is like carrots and like salt and like what, like wine, let's say, just for the sake of it, like you can't make a cake with that, right? So, but you could think about it, like you could be like, oh, well, I have salt, like I can trade that for sugar. And then you can work towards getting the right resources. But it starts with having an understanding of what your resources are. And for me, the important things were, one, I had a college degree from Penn State, which was like, okay, I can fall back on this. And it was in finance, which tends to be like one of the harder, like as in like hard, not soft skill. So I felt comfortable with that. And then I had the experience of working at Deloitte Consulting, which is also like, okay, if I go into this project and say I fail in the first few months, I can apply to KPMG, I can apply to PwC, EY, and back at Deloitte. And I can say, hey, I used to work at Deloitte. Like, here's what I liked about it. I went off. I joined a tech startup. Here's what I learned from that experience. Mm-hmm. I tried my own thing. Here's what I gained from that. And here's how I can apply it back to your environment.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the inventory of the resources. And so I had the degree. I had the Deloitte experience. I had savings monetarily from working 3 years full time before jumping into this. And then the other thing was my support system. Like, I had parents who were willing to let me come back and live with them. I had a friend from Penn State who lived in LA who let me go crash with him for free. I had a friend from Penn State who his wife and him, they let me stay with them in Hoboken for free. So they became instrumental pieces to me moving forward. And like my lease in Philadelphia was up, it like when I was laid off, I still had like 11 months left on my lease in Philly.
Yep.
So I paid rent for that 11 months, but after that I didn't renew or look for a new lease.
Yep.
I just moved my stuff back. And part of the strategy is like, I couldn't, I mean, I could, but then I have to go work a part-time job or I have to work a full-time job and try to do this on the side.
Yep.
And you see a lot of people do that in New York. Like if you're pursuing acting or you're pursuing comedy or music, you're probably working as like a waitress or a waiter.
Yep.
Or doing something to get some money so that you can buy yourself the time to go audition. But for me, because I had already worked 3 years, I was like, I'm just going to jump in this full time. And instead of splitting the time, I'm going to go 100% into this and I'm going to see what comes of it. So then you go to those goalposts. It was when I was laid off, I had a month of severance. So in my mind, I was like, okay, I have a month, a risk-free trial to do this project for 1 month. I'm still going to get paid for it. And I did that. And I would tell everyone at that time, I'm going to do this 2 to 3 months full time. And if it's going well, I'm going to continue. And if not, I won't. And the things that pushed me to continue were people started reaching out to me to be part of it.
Mm.
People started talking about that it was a cool idea. People in the press in Philadelphia wanted to cover it. And then like within a year, like March of 2017, people wanted to start partnering with me. So, and I always thought like, if all of this is happening now, when I've met 900 people and I have an Instagram following of like 6,000 people, what's going to happen when I've met 9,000 people?
Right.
My assumption was that it was only going to increase together. And that has happened. Like, I was on Kelly Clarkson's talk show back when I had met like 2,900 people.
Wow, and that's incredible.
I was, yeah, and I was partnered with WeWork at that point.
Right.
And now at 4,700 people, like, Amazon brought me in to speak to their DEI team. I've spoken at like Pepperdine University and a bunch of other organizations. And I think that too, like, if I'm doing that now at 4,700 people with the wisdom I have now, what does 8,700 people look like?
Right.
What am I sharing then, and who's hiring me to come speak? So
absolutely,
that's kind of how I've like processed it in my mind. But I think the biggest and most important thing is really that evaluation of your resources.
Yeah.
And then like, how do you accumulate more of whatever you need, whether it's trading time, money, etc. I think it's like playing Settlers of Catan, if you've ever played that. It's just you have what you have, and it takes things to do things, and you just figure out how you can get that done.
Absolutely. It sounds like, you know, if someone's watching this, right, or listening to this rather, and they're debating whether they should take a passionate project that they have full time, you know, from their job, which you see more and more people, especially within, you know, our age range, right? I'm 26. I think you're 30 or 31.
I'll be 31 next month.
I'm not trying to date you.
Hey, it's all good.
But I think people within our generation are doing this more and more, where they're taking the leap from a corporate job and they're following a passion project. Certainly, it's not the majority, but it's still a minority, but it's more people than 10 years ago. And I think it's really interesting that we're seeing this sort of uptick in it. What is your advice? So it seems like your advice to a person who's in that position and they're kind of on the edge of whether they should go do it or not, it's take inventory of your resources. And then once you figure out what you have and what you need more of, figure out a way to barter for it. Whether that's trading your time, you know, your skills, et cetera. And I think your framework of how you've done that is really, really good, right? You figured out after 2 to 3 months, you're like, okay, I've talked to X amount of people, you know, I've seen this traction, I'm dedicated to doing this more. What do I need to be able to do that, right? I need to lower my expenses by not paying rent. I need to, live, you know, off of, you know, a couch or my parents' house, etc. You know, in terms of my expenses. And then I also need to figure out a way to supplement now an income to be able to also continue to live a lifestyle, right? And fund myself through these next, you know, however many months. And it now seems like you've gotten to an inflection point of not you just like funding yourself, but you're actually seeming to be on a path to actually profiting from this, in terms of where maybe you're not just meeting even anymore or just getting by, but you're actually, you know, gonna start profiting and making, you know, a living, you know, from this project. Talk to me a little bit about that dynamic now that you're at that inflection. First of all, is that accurate? And second, if it is, you know, talk to me a little bit about that inflection point. How do you feel about where you are right now? You talk to me about, you know, Speaker Rob and Project Rob, right? Where you're talking to people on the project side and your speaker on this side. How does that dynamic, you know, now that you're wearing those two hats, work?
I think it's, yeah, I think I'm at that point now where I would say, like, I feel like I'm at the bottom of a mountain looking up at the, like, that vantage point that I want to get to. But I was like always been walking around the base of the mountain looking for the trail, and now I found the trail and I'm like, oh, okay, I can see it. I just have to start walking up it. And what that looks like for me is prospecting companies and universities and establishing myself as a speaker and getting a speaking website and learning how to talk with pauses and inflection in my voice and all the stuff that goes into actually capturing an audience. I'm doing that work right now, and I have a lot of work to do with it, but I know at least that that's what I have to do to get to that point.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's required me to be like Speaker Rob and Project Rob. And sometimes I feel guilty because I was so used to meeting 4 people a day that now all of a sudden I'm meeting 3 people a day. And if someone decides to cancel last minute, I only have 2 people that day.
Yeah.
And that can feel bad sometimes, but at the same time, like, me posting on Instagram is not giving me the funds to do the project. Like, me speaking is giving me the funds. So if someone cancels, guess what? There's 1 hour, 2 hours that you have to prospect companies.
Right.
And there's always something to be done. And it's becoming more and more important. So I've had to like think about the project and my expectations for it. And I think that's why I say it's going to take like 10 more years and just understand that the pace at which I'm moving may not be as fast, but the stability that I'm moving with is going to be much stronger. And that's really important. And that will feel good. And I think by this time next year, like, my hope is to be living as if I were working back at Deloitte, like having that kind of stable salary. And if I'm going out with my friends, I'm not thinking about like how much that meal is going to cost me or how much that drink is, because there's so much of that over the last 6 years. And I think going forward, it's just going to be a little bit more of like, oh, I can breathe now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that I feel like that's where I'm at.
Absolutely. And that is both a testament to, if you really put in the work, you know, success isn't guaranteed, but it's a much better likelihood that you're going to figure out something if you're on a similar entrepreneurial journey that you are, right? If other people are on that journey, right? If you kind of stick with it, right? And most people, I think, quit right at 95%. I heard that from another entrepreneur, Jesse Itzler, that it's really in the last 5% when you really figure out who you are and also, you know, how to make this thing work. And most people quit right before they hit that last 5%. And if they just carried through a little bit more, they would actually figure it out. And it seems like, you know, what if you'd quit at year 5? You would have never knew that in year 6, you'd be like, wow, I'm going to make potentially more money than I ever did at you know, in a corporate job, right? Or I'm going to make the same amount, but I'm going to enjoy it a hell of a lot more. I think that's incredible. Rob, I know we're coming up on time here. I want to take this moment to acknowledge you for just being so transparent, so incredible, and just giving with your knowledge and your expertise and your story. And just thank you so much for being on here. I do have one more question for you, and that is, how do you define growth?
How do I define growth? I think it's, I like the idea of like moving the needle with growth. And for me, it's very easy to do that, right? Not to do it, but to think about it, because it's like, okay, how close are you to 10,000 today? 4,700. How close will you be tomorrow? 4,702. And so I can see that needle moving every day, but
yeah.
I define growth and like even deeper into that as like setting up a system for success and then operating within that system. So for me, it's scheduling 3 calls a day with people and then showing up to those calls and having those meetings and that leading to more meetings and those meetings leading to like the speaking, the press, whatever. It all comes from meeting people. But it's the system that is really the most important thing, and like the discipline of sticking to that system. Mm. So that's how I would think about growth. And same thing, like going to the gym, like if you're trying to like bulk up, what's the system? It's your routine.
Right.
And then the discipline is you showing up to the gym and doing the routine that you have on your phone or whatever you have it. So that's the way that I think about it. And I think it's probably like, well, I don't know. I don't know anything. I have like so much more to learn in life. But I think that that is a very efficient way to approach it, is to have like a system, and then you can iterate that system throughout time, like the more knowledge you have.
I love that. Create a system that will allow you to sort of check off those small milestones. And in that system, you're almost automating the checking of those boxes to add up to the bigger wins. And not to say that it's automatic. You still have to put in the work, right, in that system, and you have to make the system work for you. But like you said, if you do that discipline, and you know, you're making it easier on yourself because you have what you should be doing this week in order to, you know, and next week and the week after to add up to a month of success, right? Or to and each month to add up to a year of success, and each year to add up to that decade of success that we've been talking about. So I think that's an incredible perspective to have on it. Rob Lawless, thank you so much for being on this podcast, for joining us today. And I'm excited to hopefully have you on again at some time in the future.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. And good luck with the growth of your podcast. And
thank you.
Everything else as well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I hope to be where you are, you know, someday in terms of, you know, the growth, but also just the passion that you have for this. This podcast lights me on fire. I mean, I love doing this. And I hope that energy comes through in the question asking just in the conversation that we had today. One last thing I wanted to say is, where can everybody find you and follow you along your mission to connect with 10K people?
They can find me on Instagram at Rob's10KFriends. That is where I post everyone's picture and their story. So that's like the documentation of the project. I do stuff on TikTok, which is kind of just like behind the scenes and tips and stuff. And I have a website, Rob's10KFriends.com, which kind of loops back to the Instagram. And then roblawless.com is going to be my speaking website. So I'll be putting a lot more stuff there as well in terms of like that professional endeavor of becoming a speaker. But yeah, that's where I'm at. And if people are interested in meeting, hit me up on Instagram. And it might take me a bit to get back, but there's no one I'm not interested in meeting. So if I don't get back, it's not because I'm not interested. It's just because I have other messages that I have to get to too.
I love that. If you want to meet with Rob, reach out on Instagram. If you want to have him as a speaker, go to the eventual roblawless.com. But otherwise, reach out to you on Instagram or...
Yep. Yeah, it's perfect.
Cool. Instagram for communication and look at everything else in terms of the websites. Rob, thank you so much again. And we'll catch you soon, man.
Sweet. Thanks, Dan.
Hey guys, thank you so incredibly much for listening to today's episode. It means the world to me, and I'm so grateful for any member of this audience. If you found today's episode valuable, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you're listening to this show. Subscribe to the show, rate us 5 stars, and drop us a review if you can. It would mean the world to me. Remember, you are valuable, you are worthy, and you are already enough. Now let's go out there and grow together.